Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We're going to be discussing today a subject that the Americans are very much known for. They're not the only ones in the world, but it's that spirit of innovation. What can we do with what we have? How can we use it differently? Can we improve something? If so, what are the options we've got? And many times when it seemingly is impossible to achieve, innovative, creative individuals say, wait a minute, I've got an idea. Well, that's with individuals. What if we had a team of like-minded individuals working towards the same objective? Well, many of us have had experiences with so-called teams that just didn't cut it. Well, my guest today, Chris Grievous, is going to be sharing some very good thoughts and perhaps some different perspectives regarding putting together a team of people that can be innovative, that can create the dynamic of change and flow that you may want to have, not just in business, but also in your relationship. I want to welcome Chris Grievous. His book is The Innovative Team, Unleashing Creative Potential for Breakthrough Results. Chris, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Now, you have your own company. It's Chris Grievous Consulting, and you deal specifically with businesses, helping them to develop a new organizational layout, leadership develop, but you really are a strong believer in creativity.
Yes,
I am. You believe in stepping outside of the box, which I think is very important, but sometimes the boxes work. All you need to do is maybe put a different spin on them, and that's what you're all about. Now, you're located in Seattle, Washington. You and another gentleman, Gerard Puccio, put together, he's the department chair and professor at the International Center for Studies in Creativity. He's in New York. How did the two of you ever get together?
Well, he was a professor of mine when I was getting my master's degree.
Uh-huh.
That was 17 years ago. And since then, while I've gone off to have a career in organizational development and leadership development, he and I have collaborated on a couple of research projects and presented at conferences, and now we've created a book together.
Well, I think the book is just marvelous. Since you have been involved in business and you have made this your focus, for you, what was the greatest stimulus as an individual in developing this career venue? There will be those people that say, well, what was it that made you decide that this was going to be your niche?
Well, many years ago, about 20 years ago, I was in a job that was a menial kind of tech job. And I was working with people who generally had a high school diploma. Maybe a few of them had been to some college. And the job was repetitive. It was something we did for the money. And it was incredibly uninspiring. And by the way, I recommend if you've got kids, make sure they get a really bad job once or twice in their lives, because it'll inspire them to do something different.
I agree.
And what happened was that's basically what happened. I was asking the question, why would people want to live their lives like this and just work for the money and not I mean, you spend so much of your time at work, mm-hmm. you know, of your life at work. Why wouldn't you want to do something you really enjoy? And in talking with people, professors and friends, I was finishing up my undergraduate degree, and I knew I wanted to go to college, I mean to graduate school. But I started asking the question, what would motivate people to want to, you know, achieve something more? And somebody eventually said, I think it has to do with their creativity. And I thought, wow, now that would be an interesting thing to study. So I started looking around for places you can study creativity and find out what, you know, how to make people want to inspire themselves to do something better. And I found this great program in Buffalo at the International Center for Studies in Creativity that offered a master's degree in creativity and innovation.
Interesting.
And I thought, wow, that sounds really cool. And it turns out that's the only program in the United States that offers a graduate level degree in creativity and innovation. And basically what it is, it's a study of creativity in terms of creative person, qualities about a person that makes them creative, qualities about a creative environment. How do you create a climate that induces creativity or encourages it? Qualities of creative product, what makes a product stand out as being more creative than others, and probably most importantly, process. So what's the creative process that people go through? And what the research has shown over the last 40 years is that there is a universal creative process that we all take naturally. And you can do it whether you're aware of it or not. It's it's the way human beings tend to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
And since we know that, we also know that people interact with that process in different ways. And that's where my co-author's research has really paid off, because he's created a measure that tells you where in the process you like to spend your time and where you don't. And
right
from that
comes
the book.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right at the beginning of your book, you talk about the foresight preferences on an individual level. It's recognizing your strengths and natural areas of comfort as you do your creative thinking, understanding blind spots and potential areas of pitfalls as you're going through the creative process, and then learning what areas of thinking you need to develop to become a more creative powerhouse. Just those three points, I think, should be very inspiring. It should be something that people go, wow, this is something I want to get my teeth into. Why do you think that people will step away from that? They will get excited, but then they don't know how to go any further. Why do you think it's so difficult for people to make it okay to be creative?
Well, I think there's a few things that get in the way. Well, I'll tell you, one is sort of a subtler one, and that's that I think people like the mystery of being creative. They like to think of it as something that's not understandable, and they want to preserve that mystery. So trying to think that it's something they can control, they want to dismiss it. That's one point. The other is I think people in businesses tend to be not as open to talking about creative process or even their own process when they're going about getting work done. Most of the time it's because there's a pressure to get something out the door.
Mm-hmm.
There's a pressure for immediate results. There's people are always talking about getting the low-hanging fruit, which is probably one of the most short-sighted business goals you could find. But you need to, to be able to talk about process means that you're exposing something of yourself and putting it out there for either judgment or for comment, and whatever judgment that would be. And that's uncomfortable. And also, it's a way of holding each other accountable. Well, you said you were doing this process. Where are you in it? How is it, you know, how's it going? I think that that we have an aversion to that as well.
Your book has a wonderful story form that you utilize that is fictitious. It's about a company, and this company is needing to go through adjustments, which is, in today's world, very, very fast moving. I mean, with technology today, we're moving at a pace that is just incredible relative even to recent history. You go back 20 years, the pace of change and acceleration for change is almost mind-boggling if you just look at the various things that are going on, but it doesn't have to be. And the story that you have in your book about a team of people the diversity in their behaviors and how eventually these people were able to come together and work. And I bet you $10 to a donut that you're going to find just about any group of people. If you throw out, gee whiz, how's it going for you in business today? You're going to get comments. You can't find the help that you need. We are absolutely so concerned because we just don't think we can adapt. We don't have the money. We don't have this. We don't have that. I bet you, you will encounter those conversations. How would you work around that?
Well, I'll tell you. I'll start with telling you that your comment about people wanting creativity or needing that because of the fast-changing marketplace was echoed recently in an IBM study of a survey of 1,500 CEOs around the country.
And they
cited creativity as being the number one leadership quality needed for the 21st century, ahead of integrity, ahead of everything else. 60%, in fact, said creativity was the number one thing. So what's unfortunate about that is that creativity is kind of a nebulous term. People don't really know how to label that. And your next comment about how you can get your teams working towards it, first is you need to define what creativity is for your organization and what are we really striving for, and then create the conditions that'll help that flourish. And one thing we know is that the rush to get things out the door is a limiter. It's something of course, we want immediate success, but in order for something creative to happen, we have to allow ourselves to fail. And, a famous quote from Thomas Edison was, that he had tried 999 ways to make a filament for a light bulb, and none of them worked. And someone asked him if he was discouraged. And he said, well, no, I know 999 ways not to make a light bulb. And it was each of those trying and failing that helped him get to that ultimate result. And what we have day when it's night. So, I mean, that's one of the ultimate innovations. We have to be able to give ourselves time to tinker, to take those ideas that happen and let them fail and then recover from that, learn from it, and tinker with them until they get to be really terrific. Very rare is the idea perfect out of the box. So we have to give ourselves a chance to allow that kind of idea time and idea development to happen.
I concur. And sometimes, I was just chatting about this day before yesterday with someone who is in business. I said, I've never seen life go in a straight line. It just doesn't happen that way. And one of the things that I have found that's been absolutely invaluable is being willing to open up the mind, open up those creative juices, and talking to others and saying, what would you do in this kind of situation? And I find it so interesting in business. There is this sense of rush, 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 rush. And with a number of business people, including myself, I've gone through this many, many times, you'll get the admonition, it's all the bottom line. If you aren't doing something and it isn't getting XYZ dollar result, forget it. You're wasting your time. Just move on. I've encountered so many people like that. And to so many of us that have listened to this kind of rhetoric, it becomes very, very discouraging. We go, but I have this wonderful, wonderful idea. I really want to do it. And I find if you can get people around you, and that's part of what your book is about, if you can get people to see the bigger vision, if you're the leader, if you're the one that's got the head positioning, you have the vision, sort of like Walt Disney. He had the vision. He had more people tell him why it would never be successful, including his own brothers, who handled all the money. Yet when Walt would talk about the vision and would present his vision to other people, they would just get excited. They could see the beauty. They could see everything. And this man went bankrupt I don't know how many times. in his business career, but he never gave up the big vision, and he had teams of people that worked towards getting this done. And the story is just incredible. And this was not an overnight success. This is a man that worked for a long time. And I think so many times people, they say, gee, I've got my boss. My boss just isn't open to ideas. When you talk to someone, when you have your classes, and you have somebody that their bottom line isn't what it's supposed to be. They're just, their heart, their creative heart, is locked up and just the key seems to be thrown away. How do you break through that, Chris? What do you do? How do you help them?
I think there's a couple things that would have to happen with that particular example. And that would be, number one, you have to figure out how do you stay afloat during the time of development. So you would need to ask the question about, okay, what's the minimal that I need to get done while we're working on the bigger picture? So you deal with the fundamental needs at first. Second thing is then I would be working diligently on how do we accomplish that bigger picture? And by understanding what the creative process is, by engaging your people in their preferences for that process, so you're engaging them in their diversity of thought, how do you bring about that terrific success at the end? And I think you can do it. You can do it by being deliberate about the process and by being mindful about the people that you have on your team, making sure that they're all engaged, making sure that when they reach a part of the process that they're not comfortable with, that you have a facilitator who can bring out tools and techniques to make sure that they engage in that part of the process anyway and that they get the result that they want. I mean, one of the biggest, I think, fallacies about innovative companies is that they are that overnight success. I don't think there's such a thing as an overnight success. A lot of work goes into it.
I agree.
And it just so happens that it suddenly appears on the stage and we say, oh, look, it's an overnight success. But no, a lot of work went into it before it appeared on the stage. So it's engaging in that work, making sure that you've done it thoroughly. I think another misconception people have is that creativity and innovation is all about just coming up with that idea, that new breakthrough, wonderful light bulb that goes off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's only a quarter of the process. I mean, the way we understand creativity and the way it works, the first part of it is clarifying the direction you're going to head. It's understanding the whole situation, looking at the data, looking at different directions that you can go, understanding the problem in different ways. Then it's figuring out which direction you want to go, generating that idea, and there's plenty of ways that you can generate really wacky ideas, and then take those ideas and turn them into things that are workable. The next phase is developing those ideas. So you find the ones that you think are workable and you try to polish them, build on them, make sure that they, try to break them and then fix them again so that they become stronger. And you make them until they're as perfect as you can get. And then you move on to implementing. And implementing is all about, it's not just project management, about getting something out the door and successfully. It's also about change management. How do you help people adopt and adapt to the change? So, and that takes a whole other skill set. And what mm-hmm. we find is that people are strong or like to spend their time in one of those four areas over the others, maybe even two of those areas over the others. And if that's the case, that means they might need help with those parts that they don't like spending time with. But if you don't spend time in each of those four areas, you're not going to end up with the best result.
I think what you have said is very well positioned, because I think of one company that's coming into my mind right now that they had particular persons on staff. Some of them have been with the company for a number of years, and there was a general disposition with one individual in particular that couldn't adapt to change, and it was a frustration to everybody around until finally this person reached a point where they retired. And what's sad about this is that this individual had not been cultivated or encouraged to adapt. And it was almost like a war that was going on within this company. And sometimes I know people do have to be released. It's time for them to move on, and that's fine. But I think in today's world, we're finding that it's so important not to throw out knowledge that people have, and working with them and assisting them, just like you said, to make an adaptation so they can feel like they're part of a creative process. And age really doesn't have anything to do with it. It has to do with a willingness to be able to learn, to be adaptable, and to be flexible. I love one of the titles of one of your chapters in the book. It's just what kind of a duck are we dealing with here? And in your fictitious story, you have all of these people that are coming together. Each of these individuals have such wonderful strengths, yet there is this discord because of a lack of good communication. And the image of if you have a duck, if it quacks like a duck, if it walks like a duck, and then someone comes up and says, well, what if it is a swan? What if it's a goose? And these verbal visuals that you use in your story, I think, are just wonderful. And you have these different people that are part of this fabricated company, and the adaptability and thinking process with each and every one of them is so different. How can someone become aware of how to deal with this diversity? You mentioned using a facilitator earlier. What does a facilitator do?
Wow, thank you so much for that question. It was so wonderful to listen to, and I really appreciate you reading the book and spending the time to find those things. It's really wonderful. One of the comments that I've received of people reading the story was that it illustrated the value of good leadership and the value of a facilitator to help a team through. It's that ability to keep a team on process that, and then be able to have facilitation techniques, tools to help the team through those rough patches. And you talked about the way the characters would approach things differently, and that would also lead to conflict. Part of the goal of writing the book was to show that people who approach problems differently, approach their problem-solving differently, will inherently run into conflicts with one another because they're coming about it from different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have somebody who, for instance, likes to spend time clarifying the problem, and that's where they want to spend all their time. They like looking at data. They like looking at the problem from all sorts of different angles. And then you have another person who, say, wants to get something in action and implement. They're going to be wanting to push something out the door while the other person's trying to hold them back. That's the way they're going to feel anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You're holding me back. Why are you still questioning what the problem is? Whereas from the perspective of the person who's doing the clarifying, what's your rush? We haven't figured out where we're going yet. We can't implement something right away. So they'll inherently have a conflict. What a facilitator can do is help bridge that gap, be able to see where the team is really in terms of solving the problem, and be able to utilize those people toward the right stage of the process that they're in. So knowing process is key. Knowing your people and where their strengths are is key. And then making sure that you stay on track. And that's why having a facilitator or a leader who's a facilitator really makes an enormous difference. And matter of fact, I'll give you an example of that in another IBM example. They actually did a study where they had a group of, they compared groups that were trained in creativity and problem solving and understood their preferences related to the foresight model. And they compared the results of those groups with groups that were untrained and found out that there was an enormous difference, that they consistently outperformed, the trained groups consistently outperformed the untrained groups across
mm-hmm.
the board. And this
mm-hmm.
was actually published in the Journal for Innovation, Creativity and Innovation Management. So we know that understanding process works. We know that you can create a team that will appreciate each other's different, diverse viewpoints and understand process, and we know that that's a way of getting great results. So the purpose of writing the book in the way it was, in the story format, was to allow the reader both first to identify with the characters, see how these types really play out in real life, and be able to see how, you know, what's the value of that leader coming in? What can that leader really do to make that group move from being just an average group producing, you know, average results to being a group that can really produce something that's a breakthrough?
I think if the process that you present in this book were utilized before someone even hired a new CEO or considered anyone for a positioning, if this kind of thinking were in place, instead of looking at just a resume that someone has, there would be an engagement in an interviewing process to be aware of the people you already have. And how can we make this work? I can't tell you how many times as a counselor I've encountered conversations with people who are part of huge, huge companies, and they feel like they're nothing but a little tiny pin on a big pegboard with thousands of other people or hundreds of other people, and they just say, nobody cares. And so they go in and they feel their job is lackluster when it comes to contributing things. They don't feel like they're valued. What a difference with the concept of developing innovation thinking, but understanding the process of human personality at the same time, both on the leadership level, whether it's whatever management position it is, as well as the employee level, because every single person in a company is very valuable. No job is insignificant. Every single one of them is very important, because if anything is out of order, the whole thing goes awry. So it's just a wonderful book that you have put together, The Innovative Team, Unleashing Creative Potential for Breakthrough Results. And I think also this book, someone could read it and could apply the same technique with a relationship in their life. If you're on a volunteer or within a volunteer environment, or you have your family, everybody's so different. Thank heavens, we wouldn't have anything to talk about if we all were the same. We don't want to be just little clones like robots roaming around. The human character is meant to be diversified, but that's a challenge as well as a blessing. And I think your book, The Innovative Team, goes a long way to presenting concepts of thinking and also practical application that just about anybody could use if they were open to checking out something that might challenge your thinking on one hand, but also expand their world and create better relationships all the way around. Work, business, professional environments of all kinds, and personal as well. Chris, I know you've got a website. It's chrisgrivas.com. It's C-H-R-I-S-G-R-I-V-A-S. Do you have a closing thought for my audience today before we say goodbye?
Well, I just like to encourage you, if you've ever thought of yourself or you have ever said, I'm not creative, think again. The question really isn't how much creativity you have, it's how you use the creativity you have. And discovering in which ways you like to apply your creative thinking can go a long way into helping you be engaged at work, engaged at home, and to understand how you can approach solving problems better.
I think those are very wise words. And I want to thank you again, Chris Grivas, for being my guest today. Check out his website, chrisgrivas.com. I really think that whether you are a single entrepreneur, whether you're a mom, dad, doesn't make any difference, a teacher, whatever your place in life is, this book can go a long way to help you become aware of how you can adapt to changes, which are happening very rapidly, and also work well with the people around you. Again, Chris Grivas, thank you for being my guest. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
An avatar is coming to the Seattle area. Lovingly known as Yogi Raj, he will be doing these upcoming events. Saturday, August 25th, 6 to 8 p.m., Healing and Enlightenment Workshop. This is free. An interactive event. Donations accepted. Location, Asian Resource Center, 1025 South King Street, Seattle, Washington, 98104. Tuesday, August 28th. Yogi Raj will be teaching and sharing his knowledge in a very special class at the Ascension Into Life Foundation. Visit ascensionintolifefoundation.org for more details. Friday, August 31st to Monday, September 3rd, Kundalini Kriya Yoga of Babaji Retreat with Yogi Raj, location Fort Warden, Port Townsend. Each of these events will offer you the opportunity to learn about the ancient Himalayan knowledge for self-mastery called Kundalini Kriya Yoga of Babaji. For more information, visit sidhanath.org. You can register for the event through northwestevents.eventbrite.com or call for reservations 909-907-9605.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines, if you'd like to give me a buzz, they're now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a quote with you today, and it's very much dovetailing with what we've been discussing today, and it's by A.E. Hotchner, and this is what was said. Of course, we all have our limits, but how can you possibly find your boundaries unless you explore as far and as wide as you possibly can? I would rather fail at an attempt at something new and uncharted than safely succeed in a repeat of something I have already done. Let me share that again. We all have our limits, but how can you possibly find your boundaries unless you explore as far and as wide as you possibly can? Explore. When I was participating in the RIM Fair these past 3 weeks, I love watching the children. And the reason I love watching the children is that they are of that dispositioning. And one of the saddest things that I have seen are parents saying, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. No, we all do it. If we've been parents, we're all going to tell our kids, no, don't get into that, don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other. There are areas that we want to work with our children about regarding safety. But there is something that's happened in, I'd say, the last 20 years especially, where it's like, don't explore. You find this in schools. You find this with a lot of teachers. We don't want to go out and look at something different. We want everything to be in a little box. And what happens with kids if they are not encouraged to explore, try different things, have a chance to fail? They grow up into adults that seem to think they're entitled. And when life comes along and gives them a good swift smack, they sit and they cry. And they get in their pity pots. It's like, oh, woe's me. Oh, life is so hard. Give me a break. Sit with a veteran from World War II. Or go spend some time in a hospital with people who have illnesses and diseases and how they're having to battle to survive. Or better yet, join the Peace Corps. Wake up and realize that there's so much going on in life. We want to be able to explore. There's an adage, the necessity is the mother of invention. Well, why is that the case? Somewhere along the line, someone says, boy, this is a bunch of crap. We need to do something better. We need to just do this differently. And you'll have 10,000 naysayers saying, oh, this is the way it's been done for the last 20,000 years. This is the way it is. No. And that person may have to struggle and fight and just going against the rhythm and the patterns of what is to create change. And it's something, as our guest said, it doesn't happen overnight. Be willing to step out of your comfort zone. I was talking with someone just yesterday, a client, and I was saying, be willing to try something different. Open up your world. This is a person that has never been in a public library, if you can believe that. This is a person that was raised in an environment that confined her to such a degree. She is now in her elderly years and just learning how to step out of this box of belief, attitudes, and habits that she's had. And it's tough for her. It's very tough. I don't know why it is that there is so much social demeanor, I'll call it, about keeping things the way they are. I respect tradition, and I think there are certain things that are absolutely wonderful. And I think that there is an important aspect with certain attitudes and, you know, having integrity, being aware of what we would call right and wrong, and treating people, following the golden rule, treat them as you would like yourself to be treated. If you don't want to be beaten up or cheated or whatever like that, then you don't do it to other people. You have to be mature in life, that's true. But we don't gain maturity by living in isolation. We gain maturity by being a participant in life. We gain maturity when we realize that it is our attitudes, our actions we're responsible for. We take care of our own space. We're going to be able to contribute something to the world by example and demonstration. The people will come over to you and say, hey, I want some of what you got. What is this with you? I don't get it. And you can share your wisdom with them. Doing something differently, going to a different store, trying something that you've never tried before. It is exquisite. I love the story about, and I know people that have done exactly this. I've heard it. There was a friend of mine that was sitting with someone she'd known for years, and they were talking. This woman was dying of cancer. And so in the course of the conversation, the woman who was dying from cancer looked at her friend and said, Carolyn, do you realize how many hot fudge sundaes we haven't enjoyed? Because we were always concerned about being on a diet. How many times have we not enjoyed something wonderful because of our preconceived ideas about things? And my friend Carolyn, when she shared that with me, she said it changed her life dramatically because she realized she wanted to live in the moment. And she was with a very dear friend who was not going to be able to enjoy the moment. And her friend said, I want a hot fudge sundae. Carolyn said, how big do you want it? And they enjoyed it. Now, someone might come along and say, you shouldn't have done that. She has cancer. She has this, she has that. You shouldn't do that. But Carolyn said it was a real big wake-up call for her. And she looked at her family. She looked at her life. She said, I had all these little paradigms in my life. This is what you do. This is what you don't do. And it took a friend who was dying to make her realize that she was going to go after the dreams that she wanted. She was not going to do the established protocols. She was going to step outside of the box. I wonder, do you have any boxes? Boy, did I have a plethora of them. And I still have a few. There's some little boxes. I'm going to stay inside. I really like them. They fit me very nicely. But there's others. Mm-mm. I'm out of there. I like the diversity. I like different things. But sometimes we get so engaged and so engrossed with our everyday responsibilities, we forget to look at life as a living opportunity. That's what we forget. So, adaptations, great. Adjustments, okay, we're all going to have to go through them. But realize you have a choice of opening your mind, opening your heart, opening up your attitudes. And you don't try to change everything at once. And realize things do take a while to evolve. Sometimes you can do it quickly. Sometimes you may not. It might take you years. The key is to start with right where you are. And again, Hotchner said, I'd rather fail at an attempt at something new and uncharted than safely succeed in a repeat of something I've already done. This is something don't be afraid to try. When you go into the ice cream parlor and you say, oh, it's a hot day, I want to try something, I want to have my standard rocky road, why not try a pistachio? Why not go with a sorbet? Or an Italian ice. Why not try something different? What's the worst thing that can happen? Yeah, I don't like it, or woohoo, I discovered something different. It is wonderful. Don't be afraid to try different things. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you would like to chat. It's 888-627-6008. And if you are a first-time listener, I welcome you to this wonderful opportunity to interact and share, and give me a buzz. All I need is your first name or initial, and then I'll give you information about yourself. 888-627-6008, and you'll even be able to ask a question of me, whatever you would like to know. Well, I thought I would share with you some little bits of trivia, and this has to do, well, with some people that have odd ideas. Doing something different. The Guinness Book of Record, is absolutely marvelous because you have all of these people that decide they're going to do something that nobody else has done before. Or if someone has a record, they want to go and they want to change it. I think it's great. I wouldn't necessarily want to do what they do, but I love reading about it and finding out about it. There's a guy that wanted to do underwater juggling. That's right, underwater juggling. So, a gentleman in Devon, England, and he did this without an oxygen tank, okay? He didn't have any of that with him. He immersed himself in a glass tube. He had a snorkel unit, and it obviously is pretty cold because the photograph that I have in front of me depicts weather like we have in the Pacific Northwest. This is very common in England. It was wet. It was rainy, and it was cold. This guy, with a single breath, managed to juggle three objects underwater for 1 minute and 20 seconds. Is that a big deal to the world in general? No. Most people would say, okay, great. But he did something that for himself proved that it could be done. Who knows? Maybe in a physics laboratory it's going to make a difference. And then also, those of you that are over the age of 60, I want you to know that you can be a powerhouse physically. There's a woman, she's called Tough Granny. Mm-hmm. She's over 76 years of age. She's a little bitty gal, and her name is Sakinat. She is from Dagestan, Russia. She can tear through phone books. Boy, you wouldn't want to meet just this grandma in a dark alley. She can tear through phone books, lift a 52-pound dumbbell while standing on a bed of nails, and break iron horseshoes. Uh-huh. I don't think you'd want to meet her in a dark alley. She first realized how strong she was at the age of 10 when she moved a 660-pound box of grain equal to the weight of four grown men. Go, Granny. Man alive, what a gal. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she's still alive. I have no idea, but I think that that is something that should make us aware that if we can take care of ourselves physically, we can enjoy strength, stamina, and wellness. Well, I know she had it at 10, but it's still going strong at 76. So take care of yourself. You never know when you're going to have to move a piano, you know, or a 660-pound bag of grain. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a call if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. You all know how I really love recipes. Well, one of the things I wanted to share with you today was a little bit of trivia about a nut. That's right, the almond. Now, the almond is one of my favorites. I really love the flavors of almond extract in baking and in puddings. It's just absolutely wonderful. But there's a little bit of a history about the almond. So much of what we take for granted is really, it goes back a long, long way. And they've been cultivated, oh my goodness, I don't even think they know when it actually originated in Mediterranean countries and the Orient for, you know, thousands and thousands of years. Now, the almond is a seed or a kernel of Prunus amygdalis. I know, they name these things and you hardly can pronounce them. Now, this is related, this is a plant, a tree, that's related to the peach tree. In fact, the almond closely resembles the peach in its blossom and its young green fruit. Now, the almond tree gets substantially larger than a peach tree. And, of course, the fruit that it bears is very, very leathery, and when it matures, it splits open, and you've got the nut and the shell. And it's light tan in color, and the nut itself has a medium brown skin, and all of us that buy almonds know this. It's not anything new. However, there's different types of almonds. There are sweet almonds, and those are the ones that we use. Bitter almonds are used for the almond extract, but they have to be processed first. And you know why? There is an acid, prussic acid, which is a poison. So the bitter almonds would kill you if they weren't processed. Used in tiny quantities, they're not going to be harmful at all. I didn't have a clue that there were that many differences with the almonds. Now, there is a belief that the almonds were brought here to the United States. In fact, there's huge almond orchards in California because the weather is just perfect for growing them. And they believe the early Spanish missionaries brought them over to cultivate because almonds were one of the favorite foods to eat and also to use as flavoring. And their flowers are just absolutely beautiful. And the Chinese, the ancient Chinese, there were Pygians that used it, they just felt, there were so many stories about the almond tree. It was just one of these life-giving trees. And the flowers, again, were just utterly spectacular. And you find it mentioned in the Old Testament. And they just really add a lot of flavor and texture to food. And if any of you have ever had marzipan, which is an almond paste, very sweet almond paste, oh, it's just delicious. Nothing like almond marzipan covered in chocolate. And that's just, it's just ground almonds mixed with sugar. It's just absolutely delicious. And you can use it in so many different ways. Now, in Europe, almond oil is something that people like to use. And they've almonds, believe it or not, have been used for thousands of years in powders, creams, and lotions to enhance the beauty of women. In fact, there were often the beliefs that when women used almond milk or anything that had to do with almonds, their skin would become just as white and beautiful as the nut itself. Well, I wanted to share with you a recipe for burnt almonds. And this is really quite simple and very easy, but you have to pay attention when you do it. And at the Ren Fair, there's a friend of ours, Walter, and he has an old European recipe. It's an old German recipe. And he does the what they call the caramelized, candied almonds, walnuts, pecans, and things like this. So when I was doing my preparation and I found this recipe, I said, ooh, this is something that's similar to what Walter does, because he has this wonderful caramelized coating that goes on all of these nuts. And they're absolutely delicious. And he made a comment to me this past weekend. He said, you know, Donna, when you're eating these, it's good for you because the almonds provide a form of protein. And they also provide sugar, which gives energy. And he said, they're wonderful. They are just terrific in this environment because it gives you some of that extra oomph that you need in your working day. Now, believe it or not, they contain not just protein, but almonds provide iron, calcium, phosphorus, and B vitamins. They also have fat. So they are not quite a complete food, but they are a very healthy food. So they're good. Kids can munch out on the raw almonds or even if you had them roasted, whatever. But let's go for the burnt almonds. Now, what you're going to need, you're going to need a cup of sugar, a third of a cup of water, and you want to put it in a skillet. You don't need a real big pot for this. And I'd recommend a nonstick skillet because this, that can really be a bear to clean up. You want to bring the sugar and the water to a boil, and you want to cook this. You want to boil it until the mixture makes like a thread. A candy thermometer registers about 230 degrees to 234 degrees. Add a package, 6 ounces of shelled, unblanched almonds. Cook it in the mixture for 2 minutes or until the syrup begins to turn to sugar. You remove it from heat, stir until the mixture is dry and sugary. You continue cooking over low heat, stirring constantly until the sugar is melted and brown. You remove it from the heat, stir until the nuts are well coated. You want them all well coated. And then you want to pour it onto a buttered pan, platter, cookie sheet. And with 2 forks, you want to separate the nuts quickly into single nuts and put them separately on another platter and let stand until cold. And that makes about 1.5 cups. You can also put wax paper in the pans, and especially after you've done the separation, and just find that they will come right off that wax paper. Keeps the pans clean. Oh, this is so very, very good. It's absolutely delicious. It'll be a favorite of the family and something you'll all enjoy, burnt almonds. Well, this is Donna Sebo. We are just about out of time. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about wellness. Lou Paradise is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about teenage drug addiction, various drugs that are in the news, and I'm going to be bringing up something I just heard about yesterday, and that is the drug Ambien. There are side effects that people are finding out that are happening, and here in the state of Washington, there's been some very special things that have occurred. Not fun. So you're not going to want to miss this. Hope you can join me. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day. It's your life. Live it to the hilt. Donna Sebo, talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.